How's it going, everybody? I'm Eric Panecki.
I'm David Choi.
And I'm John Libretti.
And welcome to the Deals and Dollars podcast.
The three of us are real estate executives in the New York City metro area. Every week, we bring on the best real estate investors and entrepreneurs we know to talk about how they made it in the business, how they sourced their deals, and most importantly, how they make their dollars.
Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. All right, let's get into it.
Let's ride!
Haley, welcome to the show. Actually, I have no idea who you are. All I know is I've been following you on Instagram for about a year now, and you are crushing it. John made the intro, obviously, so maybe John, give us a little primer on Haley, and then we can just hear from the horse's mouth.
Ooh.
John,
Johnny boy. If you don't know Johnny boy, he's part of the family now. Haley, I know you a little bit.
You guys sort of know me, but not exactly.
I know you a little bit. John,
I was the first one to meet you.
We're social media friends, so in this generation. I guess it counts.
We're acquaintances, not
we're
quite.
Colleagues.
The first time we met was at Alon's New Year's Eve party.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Who doesn't meet through Alon?
Great point. That's how I met you, I think.
Exactly.
All right. Give us a summary of Haley, and then we'll let her take it away.
No, absolutely. So I met Haley through Alon. I think just connected on social media. We never actually met in person, but we'd probably, you know, you'd hear us on the phone. It was like we've been best friends for 30 years.
All right. Simmer down.
And Alon introduced us. We go to the party, and we meet Haley, and Haley's been crushing it. Just started her own brokerage, Exodus Capital.
Exodus.
You were at Marcus before, right?
I sure was.
And now, you know, she's crushing. Every time I look on Traded, new deal closed.
New deal.
Got a great team over there, putting out some great content lately. Real pleasure to have you on here today.
Super niche entry into the market that, like, you picked a market that was, I think, fragmented, and there was a huge demand. And you guys you're absolutely crushing it. So please, I would love to know.
1 year, right? Just 1 year old? Give us the story.
Yeah,
give
11, us story. 11 months.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
11-month anniversary. Yeah,
okay. Almost
closed,
1 year.
We've closed seven deals.
Good for
seven
you.
Seven buildings, seven independent assets.
Nice.
But
in the city, in New York City, which is-
In New York City. One was in Georgia.
Okay.
But all of them have been spread across the boroughs.
Wow. Okay. So that is the-
That's our bread and butter.
The hardest place to do business probably-
Yeah.
Ever.
It's
right?
Definitely survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
What was the total sales volume on the seven deals?
Small. It's about $20 million.
$20 million? Nice. Nice.
Yeah,
I feel like I saw a post one time and the whole team as I guess just you alone individually did $20 million. But as a company you guys have done more in the last year, right?
Well, our independent backgrounds, I sold about $170 million worth of real estate at Marcus.
Oh, wow.
That was independently sourced. And Justin had done about $50 million of deals. So then ourselves, under Exodus, we did about $20 million the first 11 months. When you start a company, your head is upside down, though.
Yeah.
Right. So you're figuring out marketing, tech, this, that, LLC. So we had a lot that was trying to be navigated.
So I know a little backstory, right? I don't know everything, but I want to get you going here. I mean, first of all, you're a beast. You talk to Haley; she can stand with anybody, right? She'll bust our chops in group chat, and I'm like, "Who is this girl? Come on!" But 11 months in, right?
11 months in,
starting your company, you're doing 20 million hardest market there is.
Hardest market.
Learning
had
all
about
the things.
$27 million bucks fell out of contract.
Wow. Wow. And you're learning everything from marketing to payroll to account, and still doing that much. I think it's. I mean, hats off to you, but like, take us back, right? So how'd you get into real estate? You know, in itself, right, in the city is hard to do. And then what made you just go take the leap of faith? What is it?
So I'm originally from Long Island, Oyster Bay.
Nice.
And I grew up there for the first 9 years of my life, and I grew up with a single mom. My mom worked on Wall Street, and I grew up in the same house with my grandparents. My grandfather's Albanian, my grandmother's Sicilian, perfect concoction of pure insanity. And then when I was nine, my mom was like, I'm going to retire. I'm going to move us to a goat farm in the middle of central Pennsylvania in literal Amish County.
No way. Lancaster?
Basically.
Okay.
And we basically grew up in like a pseudo Amish community. I was hyper religious. We were Pentecostal at the time. So
I don't even know what that means.
It's basically like, to say it more or less, I understand the Hasidic Jews.
Okay.
You know, it's a parallel to that. And so during that time, I was homeschooled. I was homeschooled for several years, and I was a classically trained pianist and ballerina.
No way.
So much of which I contribute my focus to because during my whole childhood, I was practicing piano 4 hours a day and dancing 6 hours a week. So discipline was something that I had from 9 to 16.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. That's insane. That sounds like a pretty insane childhood growing up in a freaking goat farm. What?
Literally.
Like, did you, like, how was that growing up? Like, how do you feel like that impacted who you are today?
Well, I grew up reading books and learning, and I actually appreciated education, and I think it formulated my brain. Classical music is really good for training children's brains, and I think it's actually one of the most underrated skills.
Wow. Really?
So I was an insanely focused child where I could just sit down and, you know, practice Beethoven for 4 hours a day.
That's crazy.
I had an insanely competitive Korean teacher who would hit my hands if I didn't know what I was doing.
Uh-oh.
Shout out to you. Are you Korean?
Yeah. They're a little abusive.
Are they competitive?
Yeah. They're... Yeah.
I have a lot of trauma from it.
So do I.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
I mean, it's tough. Good and bad. And then ballet was extremely traumatic in so many ways, you know, body stuff, this stuff, gosh, that, competitive. And so the stakes were always high. So I was always competing. And if I didn't meet the stakes, then I was out.
Right.
So I think that's why I'm psychotically competitive. I didn't play sports. I'm not athletic. I dance and I play the piano when I was homeschooled. So I had that sort of an edge coming into it where I felt like I could get through dance. I could get through anything.
Wow. All right. So you're on the goat farm.
I'm on the goat farm.
You're super disciplined, highly disciplined, listening to classical music every day.
I go to high school.
You go to high school now.
Yeah. I go to high school and I start a really controversial, I had no friends. It was freshman year, and I start a really controversial fashion column called Fashionista the Hashionista.
Mm.
I like that.
We'll play on your last name there. Yeah.
What gave it away? The readership was dead. Nobody was reading the school newspaper. And I was like, I'm going to bring this alive and start writing insanely controversial fashion columns. So I kind of went to school in like a ghetto area. And there was a lot of teen moms in my gym class. There was a lot of drugs. And then it was split because we also had the Carlisle military war base. So I was in school with this like super bifurcated student demographic. And nobody like pulled their pants up. Everybody was in sweatpants. Mm. So I started this insanely controversial fashion column.
The ass out, right? Like that was the thing back then.
Pants sagging.
Yeah. Pants sagging.
Yeah.
So I started this fashion column and I banned sweatpants from high school.
You banned?
I banned. And then I went to student.
How'd you ban it?
How do you have the authority?
I went to student government.
How do you have that fashionista to ban?
Legislation. And I was like, sweatpants lead to bad academic tendencies. And we need to up the standard.
No
and
way.
The high school was literally up in flames over this. And there was a ban out for some time. And it did get released. But
people probably didn't like that initially.
Did you get bullied for that?
Or like, did people? Or, yeah,
there are a lot of girls that wanted to beat me up.
Did you ever have to defend yourself in that situation?
Like physically?
Yeah.
Going against the grain, I feel like, is a trend that we're going to see.
Well, it's going to be a trend. As this you is just keep like going little, through this story. A little here. Anecdote yeah. here.
I'm just getting that, like, you know, where you went to high school, you said it was ghetto.
A little bit, yeah.
So did you ever have to, like, get...
Yeah, I mean, nobody ever physically attacked me, but there was a lot of controversy.
Wow.
And I would release articles every month, so I would... Like the guys that were in white tuxes to prom, I said they belonged in like Barnum and Bailey, you know, circus shows.
Wow.
I went after No Shave November. I went after girls who couldn't wear heels. Like I really, and then the student readership spiked to like 95%.
Shut up.
Swear to God.
From
amazing.
What?
It was dead. The newspaper
zero.
Was dead, and I was like, we're creating a column. I brought it back to life. I'm the resuscitation.
Well, you know
business.
What?
Every deal has nine lives.
This is a little. This
I like
is
that.
True.
That's true.
This is true.
This is kind of off topic, but
I like that.
Creating controversy and like it's the same with social media, right?
100%.
It's the same Dude. Exact thing. If you the more controversial you are,
yeah,
right. The more eyeballs you get. So and then we play this game, right, where it's like, do we want to say what we really want to say? Because if we really say it, but then we'll get a ton of views, we'll get a ton of eyeballs,
yeah.
But at the same time you come off like a piece of shit.
Dude, yeah. Perfect example. Yeah. Andrew Tate, most controversial guy ever. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk about my opinions because I might get canceled today, right? But I was hanging out with King Kong. Like he's got like a couple million followers on Instagram. I'm like 9 tequilas deep and he's like, "Choi, let's shoot." And he starts ripping questions. And I'm just talking shit, you know? I'm just being my authentic
self.
Just being
self. Like a total douchebag. Like,
9 tequilas deep. I mean,
9 tequilas. And like three, it was in 3 drinks. I was like, triple shot, boss.
Yeah.
Popped it in.
So you're really talking.
Talking. And that got me like 900 followers in a 2-day period because he reposted he posted me, and everyone's like, "Oh, who's this fucking Asian kid? He's a scumbag. Look at him talking shit."
It works.
The thing is, like, I don't know where to stand on this, right? Like, I obviously it was gold, then it was data was the most important thing. Now it's attention, and I do want, at least you're honest. I want the attention because it's going to drive revenue through the door way beyond our wildest expectations or imaginations. But at the same time, I have like family members and my girlfriend's family that's now like, I can only imagine like what my friends are thinking. So right. It's like this
well, your
like,
friends already hate you. So it's fine.
Yeah. Fun. You know,
I'm just kidding.
I love myself. So that's all that really matters.
That
right?
is all that matters.
That is. Amen. Amen. But so what's your take on that?
Listen, I have always unapologetically been myself. I'm very politically outspoken. I post a lot of things that are controversial. A large part of why I left my firm was because of the mandates at the time. Mm. That was something that I felt pretty strongly about, is having ownership over your own company, obviously paired with a lot of other financial incentives. But people know truth, and you need to be who you are.
Yeah.
Wow. And if you own your company and you own your business, be sincere.
You're like Martin Luther King.
That was great. That was a great clip.
That was awesome. That was awesome.
I've never gotten that before.
You're like you're a trailblazer, a maverick of sorts.
I'll take that. People used to say I was Wendy from Billions.
Ooh, oh, wow.
That was my nickname on my old team, Wendy. Yeah,
Wendy, probably Wendy's
a lot of
Wendy's
psychological stuff
Love
going
Wendy.
On.
Okay,
yeah. So.
as a man in this business.
Oh boy.
Wait.
Oh, we're going there.
I want to go there.
Okay. I want to go there.
I want to get to the point where now Haley's in real estate.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we get to the point where she's there?
Let's not jump to the feminist movement.
Yeah, let's. We're gonna get there.
I'm a feminist.
All right, somewhere.
Yeah, looks like going.
No, I look like.
Is this a safe space?
Very safe. I like the fact that feminism represents equality and it represents like protection over a demographic that was mistreated for hundreds of thousands, like thousands of years, right? So good. Now women have rights. But I just think that when the pendulum swings too far, yes, and it starts to create man hate, it starts to 100%. Actually do the opposite of what feminists stood for, which is equality, and starts putting men down. Mm-hmm. That's where I draw the line. I said, we're equal. We're here to serve each other, love each other. If we're in a marriage, we're here to love each other, serve each other. Don't go around. We could go on for days. Let's move on to the next topic.
We're on the same team. I mean, I work with all men, right? My clients are men. My partners are men. My sellers are men. My attorneys are men. My confidants are men. If I'm in the business of vilifying men, then I should go work in fashion, right?
Well, you were the fashionista.
All right.
So
that was pre-high school, or that was during high school when it didn't really count. But no fashion for me.
All right, can I bring us back? All right, so
bring us back.
High school. Fashionista, controversial.
Yes.
You know, going left when everybody goes right.
100%.
That's what you do.
Yep.
Now you graduate. What are you doing?
Graduating, I'm like, I need to go to an Ivy League school.
Wow.
I went to Stanford when I was 16.
Holy crap.
16?
16?
Yeah, my mom was one of those mothers who was like,
You're a beast.
You're a genius.
But like, I actually loved school because my mom and I had like a mother-daughter book club and we read books. And my whole childhood, when I went to school, I was shocked.
This woman.
Oh, she's my North Star. Oh, when I went to school, I was shocked nobody was reading the books. So that was a very new concept to me.
Mm.
I was homeschooled before it was a trend, you know, COVID.
Yeah.
We were actually ahead of the time then. But I graduated from school. I went to Hobart and William Smith. SATs undermined my entire academic trajectory, and then I transferred to Richmond, and I was like, I want to go into the FBI.
Whoa.
And I did mock trial. I was a national competitor for years. I never drank in college, fun fact.
Wow.
You're crazy.
I could tell by the way you tried to open up that can. it was pathetic. Get a picture of this can? Can you give me that can, please? Haley, pass
okay, up. Okay.
I had to take a pen and stab the mouthpiece through because she did the I don't even know. I've never seen anything like this before.
I actually haven't never seen anyone do
this
that.
This looks like anxiety.
Most people
to me,
say
Haley.
That with me. They're like, I've never seen that before in my life.
This
Welcome
looks...
to being my friend.
All right, we're moving on.
College.
FBI. So you want
to
go
to
the FBI.
I was a public speaking coach in college. I was like, I want to work for FBI. And then I was like, you know, there's a lot of medical tests involved. There's a lot of government controlling your life. Let me try to make money. Mm-hmm. And I studied rhetoric and law. which unclear what $250,000 did for that. But
wow,
my mother would say that too.
Yeah.
I went to Citibank College internship 4 months, and it was
doing what there?
Or his internship and philanthropy.
Okay.
Wow.
Monotonous. Wanted to shoot myself. Uh-huh. And then I pivoted to an Australian legal software firm. And I was selling case management software, and I was actually fired.
Wow.
There was a scandalous case in the firm, and they let off some people. It was a mess. It was muddled. And my best friend at the time, she was like, you know, you're really good at sales. Like, you should sell the biggest thing, and that's buildings.
I heard you say this on your video.
Yeah, and it's honestly true. Yeah. We were sitting in my apartment, and so I started looking up LinkedIn, like commercial real estate. Best friend at the time said, you're really good at sales, so you might as well sell the biggest thing, and that happened to be buildings.
Wow. I love that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I love that. That stuck so with me cool. when I watched your video.
Sell the biggest thing. There's nothing bigger than real estate. Like, yeah. That is it.
You may as well sell the biggest thing that happens to be buildings.
It would have any buildings. My whole family was like serial entrepreneur. My mom was in Wall Street. She also was in real estate back in the day, but because she retired when I was so young, I never knew what she did. So we never talked about it. And I applied to a Persian firm on LinkedIn. I was like, hire me. I'm great on the phones. And, you know, Persians have a different way of starting. It's very off market. It's wheeler dealer. And I had no idea what I was doing.
You were like, hire me?
Yeah. I like came in. I was like, you need to hire me. Like, I can cold call. Because my whole childhood, my mom would be like, Haley, pick up the phone and call to make like a doctor's appointment. Haley, pick up the phone and call.
I love that.
Wow.
So, you know how many people don't know how to do that?
Yeah.
In our friend group, I was always the guy that called.
Calling.
Someone's got to call. I was like, I'll call. I don't give a shit.
I'm getting like an adrenaline rush off of the call.
Yeah. Love it.
So anyway, I start working this Persian firm. I'm like, this isn't for me.
One thing Haley always gives a shit about is like, oh, you guys don't even cold call. She's like,
yeah, she's always in the group chat. Always saying that.
Yeah. Oh, you don't even cold call. I'm like, I'm sorry.
Sorry, I slaved my way cold calling into the entire industry.
Yeah.
No, I'm envious that you have to do that.
I like cold calling.
It's like a game of chess.
Yeah.
Life is a game of chess.
A good skill.
It's a hunting game.
It's such a good skill to have.
Yeah. You can just make.
Yeah. I had a cold call on my first. I was so bad. And then I sat across from this guy for when we started our business for like 6 months, and I just listened to him, and then
legendary.
I got good just from listening. I can just pick things up. I'm not naturally a cold caller, but it sounds like you were.
Yeah, either you could sell or you can't.
Mm.
And I think I was trained. Like, I was a public speaking coach in college. I was professionally like competing for mock trials, so I was used to being up there and talking and knowing my craft.
That's awesome.
And so the phones was easy. So then I was at this Persian firm.
Well, you sold them on letting you sell.
Yeah,
and
your
ability to sell.
Yeah. Well, the best salespeople, you actually don't know on the other side you're being sold.
Right.
Right. It's just an organic process.
Right.
But anyway, I was recruited by Marcus Millichap. I think I was like 25, and I thought it was too corporate for me, ironically. And it was like window shopping. So you join Marcus, and then you have to choose a team. And there's like 15 teams, and I was obsessed with getting on New York multifamily. Obsessed. I actually have journal entries that I reflected on because they were the top team in the market. Peter Von Der Rey really had just catapulted this brand equity for New York multifamily, and he was dominating in terms of volume. And I was looking back at old journal entries recently, and I just, when you want something so badly, you just stay the course. And they didn't want to hire me. And I sat outside in a desk for 4 months reading books.
No way.
Waiting for them to hire me. And management was like, we've never seen this. Like, this is abnormal. Like, you should choose another team. And I was like, no, I'm getting on the team.
That's so sick.
And
wow.
They had never hired a girl.
I love you. You're awesome. Keep going.
I love this. This is great.
Keep going.
Roll, roll.
They had never hired a girl before. And I'll never forget in my interview with Joe Kosem, he's like, what are you good at? And I was like, I can psychologically extract information like a surgeon.
What?
Which is a really...
That's like, if someone said that to me, I'm like, you're fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I'm scared.
He was like,
you're homeschooled. Like, how do you have social skills?
Right.
So they hired me, and I worked with them for 4 years and 6 months. And it was like being in grad school. I didn't make any money really because of the splits, but I learned from the best deal makers in the business. And I'm so thankful for that experience. The guys were tough on me. I had to prove myself. They didn't talk to me for the first few months. And
are you serious?
What?
Yeah, but like, I think the industry has changed a lot. Like, kids now, the barriers of entry are so easy. But like, even like 5 years ago, pre-COVID, like, you had to work, put your head down, and produce. And it's the most unparalleled experience you'll ever get.
You're a winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not you yet. Win.
No, yeah, you absolutely are.
No, you just have the winning. You win. Yeah. You will win, and you do win. And you've won.
This is what we always find. This is like the reoccurring theme.
I haven't financially won.
No.
So this is this is what entrepreneurs, people that we always hang out with, you ask them, are you a winner? And they go, no, not yet. Right? Because they're defining winning by financial the money success. That they make or this new goal that they're achieving. But once they get there, what do they say? I'm still not a winner because they got another one, right? You said you get to the top of one step to realize you're at the bottom of the next, uh-huh. Right? So
it's so true.
You are a winner. You were born a winner. Who you are is a winner. You just have to recognize that. And like from the story that you told, anyone listening here right now can look at you and say you're an absolute winner. Everything you do, and you're going to continue to win.
Well, you don't take no for an answer, and. This is always a question I ask people when I meet people that I know either are or will be or whatever successful. Do you love to win or do you hate to lose?
I love what I do.
No. That's not the... Do you love to win?
I like this question.
Do you love to win? Because there's people that love winning. They just love to, you know, they want the fanfare. They want that, you know,
gold medal. No, I hate to lose.
Or you hate to lose. Because I hate to lose.
I'm not an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
Like, I get a high for sure off of this business. And I think it's slightly masochistic. But I don't need to be, like, also, like, I think as, like, a woman in the business, like, I always believe in being a silent killer. So when I started the business, everybody was just, like, puffing out their chest. And everybody was narrating what they were doing. And I hate people who narrate. Stop talking. Just tell me when you've reached to Z.
Yeah.
And like, I think that's the same with a deal. Like nobody cares what happened from A to Z. They just care about Z.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing to your question.
Yeah. Well, they say that talking about what you're going to do is the same psychologically as actually doing it. Right. And so I always try not to say, this is what I'm going to do. This is the goal I'm going to achieve. And try to actually do it because in your brain it's the same chemicals are released.
Totally.
Right? And it sounds like that's what you're saying. I don't want to talk about what I'm going to, I'm just freaking do it.
I've had a vision board since I was 18 and I actually just changed all my affirmations last week because it kept saying, I will have this. And I just crossed out will and I was like, I have.
Yeah. Mm.
I am a millionaire.
Yep. Mm.
I've married a great man. Mm-hmm. Like I've done all these things and you start manifesting. And Ryan Serhan had a whole podcast on this. He's like, I bought fake Chanel wallets and fake Rolexes in Chinatown when I started the business because I had to fake it until I made it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was like a really interesting point.
Yeah.
Obviously you need to know what you're doing, but sometimes your success catches up with all your hard work.
Yeah.
Time just needs to catch up.
You got to plant the garden.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I love that.
We've been toiling the soil over here.
Yeah. Are we planting?
All right, so you waited for, what, 4 months, you said, outside of
Four Marcus, months, yes.
Like a savage. They finally hire you.
They
don't
me.
Even talk to you. You're like, screw you guys, I don't care, I'm going to work my ass off, right?
Yes.
Then what happens?
Then I did a lot of deals.
Okay.
And I learned a lot. I did about $170 million there. I sourced a massive portfolio. I grossed a lot in fees. Again, it didn't really translate monetarily, but I learned under... very sharp guys. Mm. And I learned the business in and out. And I really realized a lot of guys in the industry don't know what they're doing at all.
I could agree with
and
that.
New York
Is
City,
that a guy or girl thing or just in
no,
general?
No, when I say guys, I just mean people.
Yep. Just making sure.
Sorry. No, not guys. There's no women in New York City. Yeah, basically, sales anyway. So.
You're right with guys, but yeah, okay, gotcha.
Guys definitely don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. But it was good. So then COVID happened and I think the world was in a very interesting space. And I had actually met my business partner 3 years prior at a random art gallery event.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and he came up to me and he was like, you're Haley. And I was like, who are you? And he's like, you work on New York Multifamily. And we kind of became friends. And there was something about Justin. He had this magnetic energy and he wasn't jaded. And I think a lot of people in this industry are jaded. Mm. And I have a rule, like you need to be smitten with the business at least once a month. Like, I need to be walking a block and see a building and be like, wow, I love that.
Wow, that's cool.
That keeps me alive, mm-hmm. especially when I have 24 deals up in flames.
You need something that triggers love.
You need that. You need the spark. You need the recognition.
Yeah.
It's like any type of relationship in your life. Like, you need some type of charisma.
Yeah.
So
They call it Riz these days.
Riz. Yeah, they do.
I'm not Gen Z. I'm an old soul.
I learned this last week.
Who calls it Riz?
Oh, like the kids these days.
Oh, the kids.
Yeah, just okay. Keeping
we're,
you
we're
up
old now, so.
Yeah, the Riz. Okay.
We are getting old, aren't we?
The Riz. Yeah.
Did you know about the Riz?
No, I never heard of it.
Okay, so well, now we know. Anyway, keep going. Sorry.
We're aging here. Where was I?
So I have
you,
a...
You
met
your partner. Aren't you guiding this podcast?
No, you met your partner.
I met my partner at the art gallery, and we tried to work together. We weren't really working together, but we always kind of wanted to work together.
Yeah.
And then COVID happened, and like I said before, there was mandates, there's a lot going on with the city, and we decided to do it. And we actually had a third business partner.
When you first started Access.
When we first started. And things actually fell through the day before we signed our operating agreement.
Thank God.
And it wasn't meant to be. And I'll never forget, we were walking to the attorney's office, and our third partner had called me. I'm not doing this. And you have to imagine, I sold all my stocks. I had not made any money really at Marcus. So I sold all my stocks, and our expenses went from 33% to 50%. And we really, something I've realized about myself is like, if I'm doing something, I'm doing it entirely. So we did not jip on the tech, the marketing, or anything. So it was a lot of money up front involved. And we went into that attorney's office and we signed.
Wow.
And we said, we're all in, we're jumping, we're doing it.
That's sick.
And my 89-year-old grandmother named our company Exodus Capital.
Do you know where she got the name from?
I sure do. It's from a book called The Bible.
Amen. Moses, baby. Moses.
We were sitting at my island. My family's in Charleston. We were sitting at my island. She's reading the Bible. She reads the Bible every day. And she's like, Haley, Exodus is the name of your company. She's like, you work with all Jews. They're going to love this. And you exit people out of buildings.
That's wow. So freaking good, dude.
And I was like,
I love it.
I got goosebumps.
Justin,
I really do.
And this was your 89-year-old grandmother.
That's
sharp
yeah.
as attack, this woman.
Sharp as attack. Knows about every deal
this
of mine.
This is mom's mom.
The Bible keeps you sharp.
Yeah.
As well,
folks. She lives with my mom. I grew up literally living in the same home with my grandparents my whole life. So very close to them. And yeah, she was responsible for the name of our company, which is just another added bonus.
I got to ask, first off, Justin, met him at the networking event.
Yes.
Magnanimous. This guy, I met him. I said, oh my gosh, I love you. This what a guy.
He's wonderful.
He just hasn't
said that about me once.
I do. I said I love you all the time, Eric. You don't tell me you love me,
no,
okay?
Right. I'm a tough cookie.
He's a tough cookie. Yeah. Okay. But I met Justin. He just has like this warm love that just like kind of comes out of him. And I was like, this is a guy that I need to connect with. But anyway, you said in the beginning, you started the company and you didn't want to cheap out on branding, technology, market, all that stuff, right? When we got started, I guess it was different because we're New Jersey and your target audience is a little bit more sophisticated.
Yes.
Our target audience was like, you know, regular people, right? So the
sure.
brand didn't need to be that sharp. And luckily, with the little money that we had, Eric spit together like a Google page, a website, made sure everything looked good. But it looks like you spent a large chunk of capital up front getting that started. Would you do the same thing, right? If you had to go back with the money you had in your pocket, would you have spent the money that you spent up front?
No doubt.
Yeah?
No doubt. Let me tell you why. So I came from one of the best teams in the city, so I was spoiled.
Yeah.
And I understood how the systems worked, how valuable they were, what they were doing, how they were gaining traction. Justin had come from a Wild West background. But he had also come from Goldman Sachs and Deloitte, so he wasn't you know, he's a very smart guy. And I've met thousands of men in this business. I got to tell you, like, it must have been gut instincts for us, because I can't count on one hand how many people I really, really trust. And he's just a trustworthy individual. I met his old boss a few weeks ago and he was like, you will never meet a worker like him.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Amazing. A worker. And it's really nice to feel like you can actually depend on somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that's rare in this business where you're like, you got it. You actually got it.
Mm-hmm.
But back to your question. Yes, because you also have skin in the game. And when you have skin in the game, your back is against the wall. And I'm like, I'm dying on the hill. Like either I'm eating 20 cookies or I'm having none. That's my personality. I'm an extremist. There's no
in between.
No, I wish I could be more balanced sometimes.
Yeah, I've struggled with that.
Yeah,
it's balance a sickness.
Is hard. Balance is a difficult thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you guys feel like since I started a company, I feel like my brain has like evolved into just obsession.
Yeah. Can I be like,
it's like literally, I mean, you could definitely speak. I mean, for me, it's like, if I can't talk to you about business or like real estate or like I really can't sit and talk to you about like how the weather is. I just don't even know how to, I don't even know how to do it anymore. It's just like, we don't have that. So can we make money together? Are you doing cool shit? Like, what do we talk about? It's all I think about. Yeah. Sports.
I can't talk about that either.
Yeah, right? I've been an extremist my whole life.
Me too.
Right. Like if I'm partying, dude, I'm 20 drinks in. Right. If I'm doing a sport, I'm the hardest worker in the room. Like if I'm on a diet, I'm starving. Like this was my whole thing. Like if I'm working, 120 hours a week for 5 years straight. This was me forever. And let me tell you, my biggest thing was like, dude, I want to read the Bible. Like I want to pray every day. I want to go hang out and like not go home and be like work. Right. I want to exercise and go to the gym.
Right.
I want to have a diet and stick to it. Right.
100%.
And this was the struggle I dealt with my whole life. And it wasn't until I hired a coach. He was on the podcast. Brad Chandler. And let me tell you, a lot of the reasons why I worked 120 hours a week was I kept telling myself, I'm not enough. I'm not enough. Even if I work 100 hours, if I crush my to-do list, I'll come back at the end of the day and be like, you're still a piece of shit, Dave. Keep going. And then you wake up with fucking anxiety. You can't get rid of it. Yeah. I'm not enough. So I had to retrain
your brain,
the subconscious mind. So I listened to recordings morning and night.
Me too, every morning.
Affirmations. Yep. I spend 2 hours a day now working on myself. And let me tell you, I am enough, right? And because I have that in my heart, I treat Eric better, right? We're great. We're swimming perfectly together right now. I got a great relationship with my girlfriend. We don't fight anymore. We fought last night, but guess what? We came to a happy ending. I didn't storm out of the house like I used to and punish her for 2 weeks. There was love and we got through it, but it all starts inside. And like,
totally. And
I tell you right now, there's more deal flow than we're about to buy 3 times our current portfolio. Like when you start working on yourself and like believe 100%. You're enough, the manifestation is so much more powerful.
I agree.
So I think the work needs to happen throughout the world. It's like the gospel. Like you just get closer to Jesus when you do the work of I am enough.
Well, it's like one of those things. It's like, it starts with you, right? So like people are like, oh, well, I can't. A good example would be like a relationship, right? Like people are, oh, all guys are assholes, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, well, what are you doing to like, be the person that
you want to
attract. And it's the same in business. It's like you're going to attract the right people when you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So if you're a person of high value and high standards and learning and reading and hustling every day and making connections, like you're going to attract people that are doing the same thing.
And you need to close doors for people that don't bring that into
your
life.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's very important. I think everybody should have a spiritual routine, and that doesn't need to be religion. It doesn't need to be God, but either that's, it's like professional athletes. They condition their bodies. You need to condition your brains. Every morning I start with something meditative, brain-wise.
That's great.
Constantly listening to stuff endlessly. And it's all about wiring your neurons.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah.
That's so cool. I think it's so crazy how every entrepreneur I've ever met goes in with like the 3 things that Alex Ramazzi talks about, right?
Right.
What was it? They think it's a superiority complex.
They think they're better than everybody else.
Yep.
They have crippling insecurity.
Yep.
And then they're okay with delayed gratification.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Those are crippling,
well, that's for
insecurity.
Sure.
I'm not enough.
I don't have that.
You think you don't have it, right?
You think I have it?
But I think probably everybody at this table has it.
In one way or another.
It's a dichotomy, right? We think we're better than everybody else.
But see, like, I think this has been the most humbling year of my life.
Right.
Starting a company. Like, we have been snapped
around. But who are
the
fuck are you to start a company? You know how many people dream about starting a company? Right? You know how many people like, oh, I'm going to get to this dollar amount, and then I'm going to quit, and then they get it, and then they never do. You were confident enough, right? You like, I deserve this, right? I deserve, because if anybody's going to do it, it's me, right? You had that.
Yeah.
And most people don't have that.
I always bet on myself.
Right, exactly.
Since I was a kid, though.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But I think that roots from childhood. Like, I think if you're constantly betting on yourself, and like, I always knew I was going to deliver.
Right.
But that's a whole psychological game, too, with yourself.
So take me through that process, right? Because, you know, you're working for the best team.
Yeah.
And obviously, you're learning a lot, and you're like, screw it. Like, my partner, my third partner, he's out. We're still going to bet on ourselves. We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Like, what's the thought process there?
The thought process is I had the thought 100 times, and I was sick of having the thought.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm just doing it.
Mm.
Forget it. I'm having blinders. And I met with a guy named Horvath and Tremblay. Oh, his name is Bob Horvath. It's our
You met him?
Well, he's actually our quote-unquote national partner, so we refer a lot of triple nets to them. And so he was a large mentor for us during the time, and they left Marcus and they started a company. He was like, Haley, just have blinders. Tune it out. And our first year was so challenging. We got smacked around. We had people coming after us. You know, we really – crisis management is a skill you learn when you start in the business.
Yeah, yeah.
When you start a company,
I love it.
I thrive in crisis.
I'm me too. Calm. I love it. Give me a problem, baby.
We
come on.
Say when there's no problems, it's like,
I'm like, what am I doing? What's going on?
Give me a dead body. I'm fine. Yeah. Like, everything's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. But you just got to know, I've always trusted myself.
What's your advice? Right. Like, cause there's, like I said, there's a million people out there that are like, you know, they probably work at 9 to 5 and make good money and like, you know, probably comfortable, but like, there's like, they know there's something more for them, but I think it's so sad. Probably a lot of those people probably don't do anything about it.
Yeah, but my advice, I don't think everybody should start a company.
I agree.
My advice is if you really love what you do, and I just happen to love what I do, I started a company. And that's it. It's very simple. We have fun every day.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's so hard.
It is so hard.
To start a business. Like,
and then to move product while starting business.
Did you guys have money? You guys had some money to start
up? I had no money.
No money.
I sold my stocks.
Okay.
And I mean, I grossed about $2 million at Marcus, but I never made a 6-figure check.
Okay.
Just for context. So.
Whoa.
I
made less than 5% of the gross.
I made, maybe I'll get in trouble for saying that, but I don't really care. Is people need to know that, you know, big shops are amazing and you build brand equity and you make a lot of relationships and you learn under incredible people, but financially it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
So totally back against the wall.
Oh, love that.
Back against the wall. And there's just betting on ourselves. When you start a company, all your money, the first year goes back into the company, which is part of it.
Yep.
So,
yep.
But it's your baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't pay ourselves for like 2.5 years. We lived on like scraps. You were living in like a freaking, at one point you were living in Patterson on, there was nothing in the apartment but your mattress.
My mattress. I was living in Patterson. I had a girlfriend and then it was like the kind of the hood and like the thing was like, all right, well, I'm going to start making money. And then we'll get out of here.
Yeah.
And for the first 6 months we made no money. And I think she believed in me, but she's like, I just can't keep toughing this out. This is crazy. And she's like, I can't, cause she didn't want to walk. She didn't even want to go outside. And I was like, wow. I'm like, I'm sorry, but like, I was literally leaving my house at 6 a.m, going to the gym. And I would get home at like, we would get home at like
2 o'clock in the morning sometimes, dude.
10, 12,
yeah, you work so many hours.
Yeah. And then she's like, I can't do this. And I was like, I get it. Like, no problem. The week after she left, we cast our first like 100K check. I was like,
we're rich.
I was like, you did it wrong. I'm buying a Lambo. Let's go.
Dude, we figured it out, bro. We're going to be full-time.
Little
your
did
mistake,
we know
yeah, no. That it was
Salesforce cost 100 G's. No.
Yeah. Salesforce bill lurking.
Facts. Yeah, facts. For sure. But you got to, I mean, I made my first real check this year and it was,
come on, baby, let's go.
It was something like I had never experienced.
That's so amazing.
And it was under our own company. But the money will, when there's substance, success will come.
Yeah.
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 I believe that.
Yeah.
Haley, I know that you're going on to month 12 in, what is it, March? April, right?
Yes.
Of ownership.
Of ownership, yes.
I just want to say, like, you got to celebrate that. You have to celebrate year one. I think the mistake that me and Eric made was we just kept saying, this is nothing next. This is nothing next.
Oh, my business partner, Justin, if you're listening, all day long, we just say next.
Next.
Yeah. Next. Next deal. Next call.
You
next seller.
Celebrate the wins. There's a 24-hour rule. Celebrate for 24 hours, then it's next.
Yeah.
But you gotta celebrate those little things because
it's so true.
Like, sometimes you gotta look around and be like, wow, we're, you know.
Yeah, but New York City is so humbling and
I believe it.
You know, there is no feeling like you are successful.
Right.
Ever.
There's like this thing. I'm sorry to cut you off, but there's this thing that happens. Like, failure starts. You have, first year of business, dude, we had like 50 deals under contract, like closed like five. Like we were, every deal was dying left, right, left, right, left, right. And right. It was like, when are we, Lord, please. I'm on my knees. My stepdad's telling me, just why don't you go back to corporate? You're making 120 grand a year. I'm like, no, we keep going. We keep going. But it's like in that phase of insanity, right? You start to get pent up anxiety and start
or like
living.
Sociopathic. You just don't care anymore. You're desensitized.
You desensitize yourself, totally. One, but you're living in a constant state subconsciously of anxiety. Right, like, and in that state of anxiety, you can't think clearly. Sometimes you're just in your tunnel vision, and you're like, doom. That's why I would spend 19 hours on a spreadsheet and like be like, oh wait, it's like 4 o'clock in the morning, right? But once you're able to like be like, all right, deal died. That doesn't represent who I am. I am good enough, no matter what. Next, baby. Like, if you could internalize that goodness inside always, then you have clarity, you have peace, and I think that like. That is why crippling anxiety does push entrepreneurs to work ridiculous hours. But if you could take that same person and change the subconscious mind to be like, yo, I'm freaking
great.
See, like,
fear, I don't work from fear. Mm. I think a lot of people work from fear. I work from, I just want it.
Mm.
That's great. I want it and I'm figuring it out. I've had a rough few years. I've had a lot of stuff in my life that's been awry and I'm figuring it out. I'm dying on the hill. This is my baby.
I love that.
But I hear that story a lot. And I think a lot of guys, not guys, but just in general, they people. Work from fear and that's like, or survival. Like my mom grew up, she was like homeless for some time. She went to Cornell, like the whole song and dance. Wow. And some people like survival, I don't think is the healthiest place or origin of your success.
Yes.
And that's where you get into that. I'm not good enough.
Yeah. Facts.
But it takes time. You work through a lot when you start a company psychologically.
Oh, 100%. New York real estate is probably the hardest real estate market in the country, I would say.
Yes.
And then to make matters even harder, you're a woman. Obviously.
That's what they say.
So
it appears that way.
I mean, I think, look, and it's hard for me to say because I'm not that, but I think it could be an advantage or it could be a disadvantage. I have a feeling I know where you're going to go with this, but talk us through like being a woman in real estate and like, what's your mindset? And like, I've heard multiple girls say, oh, like, you know, it's people don't respect me because I'm a girl or they don't take me seriously because I'm a girl. And like, I know from the first moment I met you, I was like, this girl's serious. She means business. She's not playing games. And I would love to do business. John, you said the same.
Yeah, 100%.
Haley,
yeah.
She's awesome. Like, it's like, wow. Like, she really knows her shit. So, like, I take you seriously from the moment I met you. So what, like, one, like, what's it like being a girl in real estate? And two, like, how are you handling that? I mean, I'm just assuming that you're handling it better than everybody else, but how are you handling that and what's your mindset?
It's a good question. I get asked this question weekly.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't have a formal thesis on it yet. I think being a woman in the industry is so nuanced. It's so gray and it's a constant balancing act. I feel like a professional diffuser and a professional mitigator, and there's a lot of things that I could never even share on record here tonight, right? And that's evident. And there's been a lot of hardships. But like what I said before is that men are my world, right? They are my clients. They are my sellers. They are my confidants. There's guys I speak to every day that I respect tremendously. And there's guys I don't respect, right? But I always say to young women, and I am a young woman, but your charisma may get you in a room, right? It may open a door, but knowledge will keep you in the room.
Mm.
And it's so important. You could be a model, but if you can't underwrite a deal and you don't know what a rent overcharge is in a DD discussion, then you're never getting the deal. You're never getting the transaction across the finish line.
Right.
So you need to understand where your boundaries are. And whatever you do, you must have class. Class is number one, I think, for being a woman in the industry.
Okay. That's freaking unbelievable advice. I have some follow-up questions on that, Haley.
Sure.
I see a lot of women that get jaded from the constant mistreatment. They're treated less than. There's less respect on the table for women.
Yes.
And this is just a fact of the matter. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, right? I've seen women that get jaded and say, and start just becoming a bitch, mm-hmm. like all day long. Like, I just have to be a constant bitch, otherwise I'm not going to get anything done. And I see women.
Or not taken seriously. Right?
Yeah, or not taken seriously. Or I see women like Kathy Anderson, mm-hmm. like true leader, monster, winner.
Professional.
And professional, and you love her and you respect yeah. her, right? Like, I met you, I said, this girl's special. She means business, right? Mm. What kind of advice would you give to a woman in business to kind of keep that positive mental attitude and forge a path towards success?
Be gender blind.
Okay.
Wow.
So stop being so obsessed with being a woman. I did my first woman's article this week. To be totally candid, I was a little nervous about it because I don't want to be portrayed as the feminist in the industry. I'm not a feminist. I love men. I work with men. I've reiterated that. So I think there needs to be an element of, yes, there are atrocities. There are so many things that I can't share, right? There's attorney-client privilege. There's broker-client privilege, right? Men always want to know how other men are treating me. This is the most common question. Mm-hmm. You need to know your lines. You need to know where you draw them in the sand. And I think for me, what's been a total saving grace is I have a business partner that is wholesome. He's a class act. And I actually can share with him some of the things I'm going through, which I've always been very private about my entire career. And I finally have a little bit of an outlet of somebody who sees it.
Wow. Yeah.
And so that's been very helpful for me.
Nice.
But yes, there's stuff that goes on every day. But if you love what you do, and I go back to this, then you figure it out.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm correct with my assumption here, mm-hmm. but you kind of touched on it. I feel like there's pros and cons, obviously, to being totally. A woman in business. And you said it could get your foot in the door. We go to a networking event. If I go up to the top guy there, I mean, he might not even talk to me. Who is this Shoshana? I feel like as a girl, you have a little more leeway there, right?
Like, but almost then, like a leg up.
Yeah, like a leg up on, you know, getting that initial conversation started.
Maybe. You'd be surprised, though. Like, all these guys are like, oh, well, cold calling must be so easy for you. Like, I have to stalk owners. Like, I sent a Greek owner the other night, like, I'm competing for his business. I sent him baklava at 10 p.m. to be a weirdo. You know, he's in the hospital. Like, I do.
I love that.
Just to stand up.
I do crazy things. Like, I pursue. You have to never stop pursuing for people's business. You have to go above and beyond.
Yeah.
But women get so obsessed in this feminist movement, and it hurts their business.
I think it messes with their mindset. I think they're like or it's like a victim mentality.
It is a victim mentality.
Like, you know, it's the same to me. It's the same as like growing up poor, right? Like,
yes,
you could grow up poor, and you could say, oh, well, because I, you know, it's easy for you to say, you know, you came from a rich family or whatever. But I mean, how many billionaires grew up freaking poor?
Yeah,
right?
Majority of them.
A lot. So yeah. Like, you could use it to serve you, or you could use
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
That's how I mean.
To rewrite your story too.
Right.
People obsessed with their story. Yeah. You know, re-narrate a new one.
Facts. That's wow. So good.
That is so true.
So good. Haley, you've been an unbelievably awesome guest. You dropped bombs all throughout. Thank you so much.
If we didn't talk about the market, but it's fine.
No,
I'm fine with that. And we made it real.
Listen, we could go about the market, but we're not gonna go about
the market's in flames. I'm kidding.
Listen, it is actually it's okay. We're not gonna go there right
Please
now.
Not.
All right.
Anyway,
we're ending this on a positive note.
Exodus Capital is your company.
Yes.
You are doing tons of business in New York. What's the slogan of Exodus?
Exiting clients out of assets and into opportunities.
I love that.
Ooh, I like that.
I love
Thank
that.
Thank you, Grandma.
I love that. So, Haley, you're a beast. It's yeah. a privilege to work with you every day that we do. Where can people find you?
Instagram, LinkedIn, email, wherever you want.
Give them your handle. What's your Instagram?
Like my personal handle?
Wherever you want people to find you.
Exodus Capital, that's CRE, Haley Hasho.
There we go.
Hasho's Albanian. I'm not Asian. Sorry.
Your Korean pianist teacher that abused you definitely was.
She would say otherwise.
Okay.
Pianist.
Okay.
Pianist.
Listen, right. We go through it, but.
That's, yeah. No, he's saying it right, by the way.
Okay. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Haley.
Thanks for coming. Thanks. This was awesome.
I've never been to Newark before besides the airport, so I'm glad I came.
This is a beautiful
city. Well, welcome. Welcome. Newark welcomes you. Okay.
Happy to be here.
right, everybody, that's our show. If you like what you heard, do us a huge favor and give us a 5-star rating and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're feeling generous, maybe even tell a friend. Word of mouth helps a lot. If you're interested in being on the show or getting exclusive invites to our Deals and Dollars networking events, you can fill out a form at dealsanddollars.com. That's deals, the letter N, dollars.com. Your hosts were David Choi, Eric Panecki, and John Libretti. The podcast was produced by me, Joshua Perna, with additional editing by Jonas DeHuse and Erwin Castillo. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.